It's Sunday, and you know what that means. Recording from the Fishtown studio in wet,
rainy
Philadelphia, PA. Rainy. It's the Gaze Into the Blue Light podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm Nikki.
And every week we discuss new and notable books, movies, TV shows, video games, comic books, etc., etc. Anything that we find that's putting off that gorgeous blue light from our screens and digital devices. This week, like every week, of course, we have a great episode for you. If you're not familiar with our show's format, first, we bring a couple interesting articles that we found online this week and chat about those. And then we each bring something to the table. It can be anything that we find, book, movie, video game, comic book, anything. We bring it to the table, we give it a review, and we chat about it. So this week, we'll we're both bringing this to the table, I guess, since we watched it together. Film that's getting a lot of Golden Globes buzz, which are they're on tonight at 8
Golden
o'clock.
Golden Globes, yeah.
Yes. Golden Globes buzz and Oscar buzz already. The film Nomadland, starring Frances McDormand. I, Steve, will be updating all interested parties on my project to go through and catch up on all the Marvel movies. 13 down, 4 to go.
Wow.
Something like that.
Amazing.
Aside from another couple scattered ones out there that aren't on Disney Plus. So I'll talk about my favorite one so far. So that will be good. And then Nikki's going to bring a brand new memoir to the table by the famous chef, writer, TV star, restaurateur.
He does it all.
Man of many talents, David Chang. His memoir is called Eat a Peach. So Nikki read that and we'll be sharing about that. So exciting. Lots to get to. Stay tuned. Let's get to the show. Okay, we're back. We are back. How's it been going?
It's been going pretty good. Yeah.
Staying dry in rainy Philadelphia?
Well, yeah, I went out to the grocery store today, to get the eggplants that were gone yesterday when you went. There must have been a big run on eggplants. I like to think it's because Allison Roman's newsletter came out, or no, this was her home movie this week. And she made a recipe for a little eggplant parm. Mm. And so I was excited to, maybe everyone else was excited to make it too. And so there was no eggplants yesterday. So I went today, got the eggplants.
I'll have you know.
I'm going to make it.
I'll have you know that, you know how everyone kind of has their own version of hell?
Yeah.
Mine is being at the grocery store and not being able to find what I'm looking for. And the amount of time that I spent looking for eggplants.
You were gone for so long at the store.
Yeah.
When you sent me that message and you were like, where are the eggplants? And I was like, oh God, I better just call him and like walk him through it. So I called you and sure enough, they were not in the spot. They're in an odd spot too. Because that one wall is like organic produce and then there's like tofu. And they're just in this one random spot like by the tofu. I don't know. It was full today. Full of eggplants. Wow. A bounty.
There must have been a robbery of the eggplant truck.
But no, I got a sweet spot at the grocery store, so I didn't get caught in the rain. I got a sweet spot when I came back, so I didn't get...
Some people have all the luck.
Yeah.
Let's talk about things that I like better than...
Shopping.
Shopping. Let's talk about our articles.
Okay.
Do you want to go first?
I'll go first. I last week said that I was going to find an article that was not on the New York Times, and I did do that. I actually felt really uninspired this week with articles. I felt like it was a dull week for finding something good. I looked for a lot of things. I searched weird news. I searched Eugene news, Philadelphia news. I had a heck of a time, but I did find something on HuffPost, which is a very well-renowned news source, I'm sure.
We only access the most renowned here.
Yeah, this is 100% truth, whatever's on HuffPost. But I thought it was just kind of silly, so...
Well, if this podcast is the way you're getting your trusted news...
Yes, yeah, sorry. No. Well, the New York Times is trusted. That's what... I mean, at least in my opinion. I'm sure lots of people do not trust the New York Times, but I do. And I... So, for me, I think that's probably why I bring New York Times a lot, is because I find it to be, you know, a well-respected...
Yeah. I just enjoy... I just enjoy thinking that... For some people, this is their news.
All right. Well, then this is going to be really useful today, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So this is from the HuffPost, and it's called 7 Things in Your House You've Been Using Wrong All This Time from February 26th. All right. So I'm going to quiz you a little bit. So the first one is breadboard. If your kitchen comes with a pull-out slab of wood built into the countertop, what do you think it's for?
I've never had one of those.
I never have either. I don't even know what they're talking about.
I'm guessing it's a cutting board.
So you think you're just using it for a cutting board? It
can't be a cutting board because you have to wash cutting boards.
Mm, good. Well, see, you're onto something. According to Country Living, those pull-out boards are known as bread boards, and they were originally for kneading bread. And you could slice bread on it, but you're right. You shouldn't be chopping chicken or, like, veggies or something on it. Second one is an oven drawer. Now, I think I found out, living in this house, that I had been using oven drawers incorrectly, which was just for storage. Put all of your pans in there. But this is saying that that's not really what you're supposed to be using them for. They're supposed to be either a warming drawer or a broiler drawer. And I found out here, because this was my first time having a gas stove, that one, like... the fire is, like, coming out in there. So I was like, well, I probably shouldn't, like, put my stuff in there. So I guess, you know, that's what it's for.
Warming.
Warming or broiling. But it says some ovens, if they have a very large drawer, it probably is storage. It says to look at your oven settings, and if it has a warming setting... or the broiler is down there. That's what it's for. The third one is a plunger. So it's saying that the plunger that we have in there is for sinks and tubs. It has kind of like that wide flat bottom. It said if you want a toilet plunger, it has to have a small circle that inserts down into the hole, or an accordion one.
Oh.
Have you ever seen the accordion ones?
Yeah,
it says that's we shouldn't be using that one for the toilet.
Well.
From Popular Mechanics.
Luckily, we don't do that.
Yeah, luckily we haven't clogged it.
Well, that's interesting. I never think of a plunger as a kitchen tool.
Well, not a kitchen tool.
Oh,
well,
sink.
Yeah, sink. Yeah, I guess so. You don't want to get things, like, mixed up, like toilet, sink, yeah. Anyway, number 4, ceiling fan. This says it's designed for all year use. In the winter, turn it clockwise, and it helps distribute airflow, keeps your energy bills down, and in the summer, spin it counterclockwise to improve airflow and the breeze. Huh. It says you should be using ceiling fans all year. Do we have any ceiling fans at the new house?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Some of them we looked at had them. I'm a fan of ceiling fans. I don't know. I don't. When I have had them, I haven't really used them.
I like them.
You like them?
Love them.
Love a ceiling fan?
Biggest fan of the fans.
Biggest fan of the fans. Number 5, cell phone charger. Now, this one I kind of do know. It says lots of people, like, if you put your phone on the charger overnight, which you do, that's not good for it. So it's not possible to overcharge your phone, but if you leave it plugged in, once it's reached 100%, it does something called a trickle charge, which means as soon as it dips down below 100, it continually tops it off, kind of like a gas tank. So you're just stressing your battery out. So you should probably stop doing that.
Okay.
According to HuffPost. Stainless steel pans. It says you should be seasoning them, like cast iron, instead of cleaning them. And they are very hard to clean. So it says just try to wipe them out clean rather than scrubbing them with soap and water.
We don't have any stainless steel.
I don't think we
have
any stainless steel pans.
That is what's like, that's like restaurant kitchen.
Yeah. We should get some. Okay, last one. Toilet paper rolls.
I thought this was the kitchen.
No.
I thought it was items in your kitchen.
About the kitchen. I don't know why you're on this whole kitchen thing.
Okay.
In your house.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Toilet paper. So this is saying the over under debate. What do you do? What do you think?
Over.
Yep. No. Wait, I can't even remember because
now we have
the up and down one.
Yeah.
Like where you just stick it on, so it's like sideways. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. So now it's been almost a whole year of using it that way. I can't remember if I'm better.
I'm
an under person.
I think it's more accurate to say pull down or pull up to access your toilet paper. Mm. And I like to pull down.
So according to illustrations from an 1891 patent, the inventor of perforated toilet paper invented the flap to fall over the roll.
The flap?
So over.
Yeah, so you should be pulling down on your toilet paper.
Either way, you're pulling down.
No. If you're pulling up, that means the toilet paper is coming off
you
of the bottom.
You have to pull down to pull. I think either way you're falling down and out. Down and out.
Never mind.
Do we need to
you don't understand complicated physics.
This reminds me of the toilet paper demonstration that we did one time where it was like, oh, are you a folder or a crumpler? And so it got into with friends, it got into a real heated thing. I think there was like lots of drinking involved. And so we were like, get a plate. And we like got a plate and put, I don't know, ketchup or something on it. Hot sauce.
Tabasco sauce.
And then you got to test your either folded or crumpled to see which one like got it up the most.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what the results were?
I don't remember.
Hmm. Are you a folder or a crumpler?
Crumpler.
Crumpler.
Yeah. If you ever need to quickly divide a large group of people.
Folder or crumpler.
Pretty accurate.
See, I do both. I think it depends on the bathroom type of bathroom situation. Number one or number two is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I
not
know
like
what
that.
They are.
I wasn't saying like types of movements. You looked at me like, oh God, this is going downhill. Anyway, that's my article. It's nothing like too earth shattering.
It's
but
this podcast. It only goes downhill. It doesn't go up.
It doesn't really go downhill. So yeah, did you learn anything?
I did learn things.
What was your best takeaway?
I guess I should stop charging my phone overnight.
Really
I mean,
should.
I turn it off.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Because it still charges to 100%, right? Yeah. When it's off. So that means it's doing the tickle charge or trickle charge.
Tickle charge.
I like tickle charge better.
You know, this has been my longest lasting phone, knock on wood.
When are you up for a new phone?
There is no such thing as up for new phones anymore. It used to be that you could get a new phone after 2 years, but that's that's not a thing anymore.
You just get it whenever
you just buy it when you want it.
Mm.
And do a basically you lease it. Like,
yeah.
Anyway.
I think I've had this one of mine for 2 years now.
Yeah, mine's going on almost. Well, I got it Black Friday.
I have to look back at my photos. Oh, yeah, you got yours.
So it's been a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
Treating me well, my iPhone X.
Mm.
Now that I say that, it's going to...
Oh, my God. Stop charging it overnight.
Fall apart. Okay.
What did you bring?
It's my turn for an article.
Okay, I can't wait.
This article is from NPR, February 27th, and it is called How Goats and Perhaps People Make Up Their Minds. And I'm personally a big fan of goats. You know, I mean, when it comes to farm animals,
they're cute.
I think goats are tops.
Goats are tops.
But this interesting article is pretty short, but it's about a new study that just came out about goats and decision making. And it's a follow-up to a classic 1996 study of buffalo. And so the buffalo researchers studied herds of buffalo, and they determined that a herd of buffalo will, quotes here, vote on which way to go based on a body language ballot system. So basically, this says if three animals are turned to face the lake and one is turned to face the meadow, the herd will sense which direction the other bodies are facing, and they'll go with the majority.
Interesting.
And so if you know, like if they all, if a majority of them kind of like turn their heads and face one direction, that's kind of how they vote on where to go. It's kind of a democratic process.
Wow.
So let's give credit where credit is due. This is Daniel Sankey from the University of Exeter in the UK, and Andrew King, who's a associate professor at Swansea University in Wales. And so they did this, a similar follow-up study, but with goats. And they came up with some interesting things. So what they did was they put GPS tags on a herd of goats, a herd of 10 goats, and they went to Namibia. Ooh. And they kind of followed the goats around to see what they would do, and tried not to like shepherd them around, like let them decide where they were going, obviously, because that would screw things up if they were, you know, running from a person or something. But anyway, so what they found is that there is it is a kind of a democratic process about deciding where to go and what to do. Democratic meaning they found that there's no like leader.
Okay.
There's no leadership. There's no one goat determining
majority.
Or no like you know, like leader of the pack or heads of the pack or anything like that. What they do is that instead of having a dominating goat, they basically like copy each other. So like if one goat heads off in a particular direction, the other goats will be like, oh, well that goat knows where they're going. Well, let's just follow them. So it's a little bit different than the buffalo. It's not like a majority thing. It's like if one of them, you know, leaves, they just kind of like follow after that goat.
Wow. Interesting.
And so I thought the interesting thing was that they kind of like relate it back to people.
Yeah.
And how people make decisions. And so they sort of said that, like, to bring it currently to talk about the vaccine for COVID, okay. That they were saying, like, if you think that you're gonna get the vaccine, odds are probably good that the majority of people in your quote herd are like also getting it.
Yeah.
Right?
That makes sense. Yeah.
Or
like-minded friends.
Or people. If you are undecided about something as a group and someone like sticks to what they really want to do,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, no, we should definitely do this. More often than not, people are just going to be like, sure, let's do it. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Even though they don't really know what they want to do, if there's one person that's kind of charging in a particular direction, whether that direction is a good direction or not,
mm-hmm.
people will act like the goats and be like, well, that person must know something I don't, mm-hmm. so I'm going with them.
Or if they're just like confident enough to make a decision. Like, I find that in like, have you ever found that with like planning to do things with friends or something? And especially if it's like a lot of people that you're trying to plan with, and then it's like, well, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Where should we go? What time? And like, there's so many things to figure out that it's almost like someone has to like take charge at some point and be like, all right, Vetri, 6 o'clock Friday, we're doing this. Or else it'll just, like, go on and on, like, forever,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And that usually ends up being, like, a certain person, right? Because...
like a leader type person.
Someone kind of emerges as the person who's either a leader or, like, the most tired of...
things going talking. On and on.
But it does seem like with the goats that there is no hierarchy. It's just sort of like... The only influence is just, like, where one of them decides to go.
Yeah.
And they kind of just walk around based on... and we'll just hang out until one of them decides, like, this is the direction that I'm gonna go.
Huh.
And then other goats just follow them around.
Like, they just saw something. Like, look, here's a patch of clover. I'm gonna go here.
And then if I was another goat, I'd be like, oh, whoa, that goat must have found something. I'm gonna go over there.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, so
that is fascinating.
I thought that was cool. A cool little, like, I like when things about animals relate back to people, because I think
like that
we're
too.
As people, we tend to think of ourselves as like the coolest cats out there,
superior.
And like anything that we do is like, oh, we're like super intelligent, and this is how we
These
do
dumb
it.
Dumb animals.
We're the pinnacle of everything.
Yeah.
But really, a lot of our behaviors can sometimes, you know, can be traced back to goats, really. And
well, and let's be honest, there are, like, some people that have much less intelligence than animals, right?
Very similar.
So, like the octopus teacher that you talked about a long time ago and that we watched, like, fascinating. The octopus in that documentary were more intelligent than most people that I've met. I can say that with confidence. Like, they were so intelligent, and so it almost made me never want to eat octopus again. But I love grilled octopus, so that will be hard for me to do. But just seeing how amazingly complex they were.
Yeah, and in that, he said something like, that type of octopus is, like, as smart as a cat.
Wow.
And there are plenty of cats I would rather hang out with than... like, I would trust a cat over some people.
You remind me of... I was walking Scrappy a couple weeks back, and our neighbor across the street was talking about the dog, and he was like, hey, dogs are the best people in Philadelphia. And I was like, well, I would probably agree with you. It was kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
We're not the only people that share these.
He's frequently on the sidewalk.
He talks to a lot of people.
Saying things.
Yeah.
He's always out there.
He's always out and
about. But those kind of characteristics are always cool to know about animals, because It is always a little tough to hear those things when you're like, dang it. Animals really are, like, smart and intelligent, and they make decisions and do things in weird, interesting ways.
Why would that upset you?
Because, like, with octopus, like, I like eating octopus. I think it's good. But then when I figure out they're smart and they can, like, make friends and hug you, it's ooh, like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Dang it.
I know. I don't eat goat, so I don't have to worry about this.
I like goat cheese.
Oh, well, but I don't... Okay, that's... I don't know. I kind of draw the line with cheese.
I draw the line with cheese.
No, let me explain what I'm saying. It's like, I will eat the cheese. I guess what vegans would get frustrated with me about is like, why did they produce the milk? Like, out of stress and force, or out of their natural production, right? Didn't we used to have vegan acquaintances in Eugene that said something to that effect of what, or they said that about chickens, like, if we had chickens and they laid eggs, would you eat them? And they said, well, it depends if they're laying them naturally or if they're doing it out of stress and captivity and things of that nature. I don't know. So
you could go down a whole different road there about keeping female animals, you know, like, I don't know how
and
they do it.
And even bees with honey, that's, yeah, it can get into that too. We don't need to get in that today.
The article was about how goats make decisions.
Yeah, let's just keep it with the article. We don't need to talk about veganism and all this.
Anyway, goats make decisions. Weird, huh?
It's amazing.
You know, I don't have any less love for goats, just because they kind of, like, go with the majority. I still love a goat.
See, I don't see it that way. I see it as they feel inspired, and I like to think that, like, there's not one leader that they follow. I like to think they're, like banding together and traveling, and then there's one, like, who gets inspired to go on an adventure, and then he, like, or she inspires the other ones to follow. Mm-hmm.
No, I think that that's true. Yeah, I was mistaken. It's not that they go with the majority. They go with whoever seems to go a certain direction, and they follow that.
The influencer.
So, yeah, I do think that it is... influencer.
Goat influencers.
I actually, you know, it could go wrong sometimes, and probably does. Like, there is one goat,
like,
that's
leads
probably
a goat off a cliff or something. Oh my god!
But I do like the idea of one goat just being like, you know what, I'm going over here. Mm-hmm. We never go around this meadow ridge.
Here's my
question,
I'm gonna
go exploring.
Though, what if you want? We're trying to get away. Like, what if I was a goat and I was like, you know what? I'm tired of this shit. Like, I want to go. Like, I'm tired of being with these people. I want to go on my own. And then you see something cool and you're like, no, like, don't follow me. Like, I want to do this, like, for myself. Why are you following me?
I don't think you're mixing goats and people. You're making a goat person.
Let's move on.
you're what's that called? Anthropomorphizing? What's that called when you give human...
Human
traits to
again.
An animal. Anthropomorphizing?
I'll ask the oracle.
Personification is another word.
Anthropomorphic is relating to or characterized by anthropomorphism, having human characteristics.
Oh. So you're anthropomorphizing a goat?
Mm-hmm. I do that with Scrappy, like, whenever I think he is, like, having complex thoughts or emotions. Like, sometimes he makes, like, a facial expression that looks like a human. So that would be,
personification is the better...
Personification.
The attribution of a personal nature or human characteristics to something non-human.
Hmm.
A figure intended to represent an abstract quality. Oh, a person, animal, or object regarded as representing or embodying a quality. He was the personification of British diplomacy.
What is it in like Greek mythology where they are like a centaur is like a goat and a man, isn't it? Together? Like it has like a...
A centaur is a horse and a man, I think.
A horse and a man.
But there is a goat and a man. What is that, a fawn?
Oh, is that from...
I only know that from Chronicles of Narnia.
Goat, I was going to say Pan's Labyrinth.
Man. Oh, yeah, he's in there.
Huh.
Goat and man.
Yeah, what is that called?
Fawn.
F-A-U-N. That's a fawn. Oh, F-A-U-N.
Part human, part goat.
See?
But in that's in Roman mythology. In Greek mythology, it's a satyr.
Oh, that's where I'm getting centaur from then.
No.
I mean, that's similar.
No.
Centaur, satyr.
Well, it's similar, yeah.
Well, it's a centaur. The horse.
Centaur is horse.
Horse and man.
That's a centaur.
Oh, okay. And that's Greek mythology?
Greek mythology. Upper body of a human, lower body and legs of a horse.
Hmm.
Centaurs are thought of in many Greek myths as being wild as untamed horses.
Hmm. Interesting.
We took a long walk. Off of that goat article.
We did. It's fine.
And their GPS collars.
Yeah.
It's okay.
That's okay. It's okay to get, you know, off topic.
It's intended on this podcast. Okay, well, we covered our two interesting articles that we found online this week. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll get into two movies and an amazing book.
Yay!
We'll be right back. Second half.
Yeah. And we did do something interesting on the break today because I tried to prove my theory of no matter if you're doing under or over on the toilet paper roll, you're still pulling the paper down. And we still disagree.
Well,
it's fine.
Hey.
We're just different goats. Going in different directions it's on true. This one.
It really depends on the location of the toilet paper.
You did make a good point about public restrooms, that they are, like, down lower. Like, the toilet paper is down lower.
Yeah.
So you have to pull down and up. You still always pull down before you pull up. Guys, we need you to weigh in on this, on who's right. Write to us. Let us know your thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
I think it's individualized. It's a private thing that we do.
It's a private moment.
It's a private moment, pulling toilet paper off the roll. And, you know, I think we all have our own... I'm trying to be accepting of all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, hey, then there's us. We pull sideways.
Hate it. I cannot. That's like...
Which is ridiculous.
I cannot wait to move out of this apartment because of that.
Why are you moving out? Because the toilet paper comes off sideways and it's ridiculous. That's why. Anyway, let's move on the great toilet paper debate of 2021. So in this part of the show, we each bring something to the table. That we came across over the week, new or notable shows, movies, books, whatever we find. But we did watch this movie together, so technically we both bring it to the table.
Yeah.
We watched the movie Nomadland. It's available on Hulu right now. It's a 2020 movie starring Frances McDormand. Directed by Chloe Zhao.
Oh.
Chow.
I don't think it's zao. I think it was more like tao or chao.
Zao. Well, if I did that wrong, Chloe, I'm sorry. I'll try to do better. It is based on a book called Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century by Jessica Bruder, which it made me want to read that book.
Yeah.
That might be another book on a future podcast, but it Nomadland premiered September 11th, 2020 at the Venice Film Festival, where it won the highest honor of the Golden Lion. It also won People's Choice Award at Toronto International Film Festival. It is nominated for Golden Globes, which are on tonight, and I had the list of them, but now, Best Motion Picture Drama, Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama, Frances McDormand, and Chloe Zhao for Best Screenplay and Best Director.
Wow.
So it's up for a lot of awards.
That's great.
It has been nominated and won a lot of awards, British Independent Film Awards on February 18th. It won Best International Independent Film. So this movie is no joke.
It was awesome.
Yeah, so just to give a brief overview of the movie, Frances McDormand is in the starring role. And she loses her job in 2011. She loses her job at a plant in Nevada where she worked with her husband. And but her husband passed away.
He passed away.
And so she leaves and she kind of strikes out on her own. And she buys a van and lives in a van and travels the country looking for work. And seasonal jobs. And so this movie kind of chronicles her experiences and the people that she meets and
real people. That's what I thought was most interesting about it. The people that she meets when you watch it are, they are real people. They're not actors, actresses. There are only, I think it's only like two, so if you look at the starring, it's Frances McDormand and then one other famous actor, David Strathairn. And all the other people are just like real people. And so I think that's what makes the movie so remarkable and just like authentic, is that her experiences with these people are real, genuine experiences. And we didn't know that when we first started watching it, but I think we like just right away were taken aback and we were like, these have to be real people. There's no way these are actors. Like, if they are all actors, then everyone's gonna win an Academy Award because the acting is so realistic. So.
And didn't you say, right, so there are, as she's traveling around, she's interacting with these people who are reprising their role from the book. Like,
yes,
it's a nonfiction book and they, you know, were featured in the book and then they act in the movie as themselves.
Yes.
And they were really good.
Oh my gosh. So good.
I really appreciated their performances and
amazing.
They gave the movie this really authentic feel. It almost felt like a documentary.
Yeah.
And there were times when you could tell, I mean, Frances McDormand is an amazing actor, but I felt like either she was acting and really pulling one over on me, or her interactions with the people like Linda May or Swanky, like her interactions with them and the laughter and the crying were authentic. Like, she was really feeling it.
I think
with
they
these
were
people.
Really authentic. I think that's why. I read an interesting article about it, and she, Frances McDormand, kind of, I guess, like, embodied a character of who she thought she would be if she really were to like set out on her own, and she actually kind of lives away from Hollywood. Like, she lives in a small town, and like the person who met up with her to do the interview, like, kind of talked about how she's just like a kind of like a real person. Like she just had on regular clothes and like wasn't wearing makeup. She hasn't had plastic surgery done. She's just very, seems really down to earth and relatable. And, you know, she lives in this just really small town where she kind of knows everybody. And so I thought that was interesting. So I think, you know, she's a little bit more maybe down to earth, and that's why she could do that role in such a genuine way. She's not in all the big Hollywood, like, glitz and glam. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, that's interesting, because I was looking up what the movie and what Frances McDormand had been nominated for,
mm-hmm.
and she's getting, you know, buzz. They don't have the nominees out yet.
For Oscars. Oh, yeah.
But, like, this movie's obviously getting a lot of buzz for it. And they kind of talk about Frances McDormand as a person that is, like, reserved away from Hollywood and doesn't do a lot of the big, you know, isn't real outspoken and, you know, doesn't kind of run in those circles very much. And that, this article presupposes is that that's a reason why she doesn't get a lot of awards. Like why she might not get Best Actress, because she doesn't, because of some awards are given based on like, oh, they really want the award, and like, I'm gonna do that person a favor by giving them an award.
Oh, okay.
And Frances McDormand is like, I don't care. These are things that I don't need. I don't need your recognition.
She doesn't seem like she would really care that much about that.
Which is interesting.
She gave a speech when she won the Oscar for Three Billboards.
She's very
passionate,
inspiring. Yeah.
Inspiring at like.
And in this movie, I think it's an amazing role that she plays. Mm-hmm. It is without any pomp or circumstance. There is no glamour to it.
Nope.
And sometimes there are movies where they're about like, oh, this is about regular people and middle class people or broke people or whatever. And the stars are, you know, still glamorous looking.
Yeah.
They still have perfect hair. It's inauthentic. You look at it and it's like, I can't suspend my disbelief here.
Right.
Like, this is still a good-looking Hollywood star trying to look slummy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is, you just feel like this is real. Like her hair is messed up and greasy. She looks tired. Like, she mm-hmm. looks like she's been living in a van
for like
many, many months.
Yeah.
And all the people,
it's really raw.
Yeah, the people also, you know, they don't look straight out of Hollywood. They didn't get them from model casting. Like, these
mm-hmm.
people are people that you would see if you spent, you know, a year out on the road mm-hmm. living in your van and stuff like that.
But that's not to say that they're not, like, beautiful, though, in their way. I mean, they are, like, they have natural beauty, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's just jarring because we're not used to seeing it. But I think that's the issue, is that we're not used to seeing it. I mean, same as anything, right? Representation. Like, not used to seeing black and brown people, not used to seeing people with different body sizes, blah,
people
blah,
with
blah,
disabilities.
People
we don't
with disabilities, and then when you see it, it's jarring. You're like, wow, there's someone's in a wheelchair. That's amazing. We never see that.
Yeah, and in this case, it's people that look like regular people.
Yeah, they haven't had Botox.
And not like big Amazonian, like, crazy models that are trying to portray themselves as regular people.
Yeah.
These are regular looking
people.
This
is what regular people look like. Yes.
And it is weird. It catches
weird.
You off guard. You're like, who is that?
Wow.
Ooh.
Oh, you haven't had Botox?
This is a movie. I want perfection.
I thought it was great. You know, I loved it. Made me feel really nostalgic for, like, getting out on the open road, cross-country travel, road trips.
Mm-hmm.
It also made me think a lot about living in the Pacific Northwest and, like, the van life there, because a lot of people do live in their cars and vans and buses and RVs. And so that is a way of life for a lot of people. And so it just reminded me of that.
Well, that lifestyle is not far off for a lot of people. And mm-hmm. the number of people that are like one emergency or mistake
yeah,
or
away from
injury.
Losing their house.
Away from losing their house mm-hmm. and their job and would live in their car or their van is really high and
yeah.
it's very realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, this is real life.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is not a joke.
I used to hear that all the time when I worked at the community mental health center, homeless center in Eugene of, yeah, like everyone is, well, not everyone, but a lot of people that are in that like middle class area are just like, that's how it started for them. Like, I was doing fine, and then this, that, or the other happened. I lost my job. I had all these medical bills, and then they're homeless.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you don't have a, like, you know, family, like, support network, which a lot of them didn't really have. You know, if you're, like, have bad relationships or, like, estranged from your family, or, like, in this, Frances McDormand has people that are like, hey, come stay with us, like, you know, you can come live with us and stay with us for a while if you want, but I think she's too proud to do that and like to accept help. And I think, you know, she also wants to kind of have some like freedom of the open road.
The movie doesn't necessarily glorify that lifestyle or mm-hmm. make it seem like it's a tragedy.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think
it walks the line between showing the real tough sides of it, but uh-huh. also the really amazing sides
yeah.
of it, too.
I think I agree. Yeah, some of my favorite scenes are just her behind the wheel, like, driving, or just her stopping at, like, the Redwoods or something and just, like, standing beside a tree, like, looking up at it.
And I like that it's not like a morality tale of like don't let this happen to you.
Yeah.
Like, get a job and like buy a house, have a family, and that way you can be secure. You know, mm-hmm. and it's not an utter rejection of that either. It's just kind of like, hey, this is what life is like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not trying to tell me what I should do.
Right. Well, because think about when they met up in the desert with that, I forget what the organization was called, but it was essentially like an outdoor workshop in the desert for like how to live in a van. Like, here's how you make a toilet out of a bucket, and here's how you do this, that, and the other, and like how to work on your van. And so she went to that, and I thought, like what you're saying, there were all kinds of different people there for different reasons. Like, the one lady, like, had cancer, and she just had 7 months to live. And so she was like, I'm out on the open road because this is the last chance I've got to, like...
Oh, Scrappy.
Shh. Sorry, guys. This is the last chance I have to be alive and see the world. You know, other people were, like in their retirement where they had a good retirement and so they were enjoying life. And then there were people who were, like kind of saying, I don't have retirement. And so I'm just living off Social Security. And so like, this is like how I have to live. So
right.
It was kind of all variety of people. So yeah. Very
I would
good.
Recommend it. I think it's a strong contender. We'll
10
see,
out of 10.
We'll
recommend.
See tonight whether it brings home the award or awards of some kind. But yeah, I would highly recommend it. It was good. Should I move to my movie?
Yeah, go ahead.
Movie fast. So what I bring to the table today, as I said...
Oh boy.
We're having barking wars between the neighbors.
When we move to the new house, we can set up a studio in the basement. Mm-hmm. It'll be so quiet, I bet.
So quiet. There's Scrappy, the show's mascot. Yeah, you slept through the past few episodes. It was great. But now, You're awake.
let's press on.
We're pressing
like
on.
Like a goat.
Like wandering a goat would.
In the woods.
I have been pressing on through all the Marvel movies in timeline order. It has been at times a long slog and at times an exciting adventure. I think I hit Black Panther, and it's a good movie. I liked it, but I was starting to feel like, oh boy, I don't know if I can keep going with all this superhero stuff. Like, it's starting to get, all the battles and things are starting to get to be a little tough for me.
I could see that.
But I watched Doctor Strange and felt renewed vigor and excitement.
Okay.
I think as I've been going through all the Marvel movies, I have evolved my opinion of all that franchise and all of its trappings and all of its hype. It's been fun for me. I've started to get into comic books more, exploring different characters. I went to the comic book store yesterday.
Yeah.
And had a really fun experience there. Bought some classics and got a subscription for a new series that's coming out. So the movies have inspired a new kind of interest for me in comic books.
Awesome.
So that's been good. And I've just started to get into the storyline more. Mm-hmm. Once you kind of learn about the characters and where they come from, it kind of becomes like a big soap opera sort of. And you just kind of start to get into the storyline. Watching it in timeline order, there would be debates on whether you should watch the order of which you should watch them.
Okay.
I've enjoyed timeline order because all the events kind of happen, you know, in a way that makes sense, and the characters interact with each other in a way that makes sense, but they were not released in timeline order.
Oh, okay.
So for me, Doctor Strange is the movie that I'm bringing because it was, so far, it's my favorite.
Yeah?
Out of all of them.
What did you like about it?
The things I liked about it, so just as a brief introduction.
Yeah, I Googled it to see what he looked like.
Doctor Strange is a 2016 movie based on the Marvel Comics character Doctor Strange, obviously. It's the 14th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the MCU. And it stars Benedict Cumberbatch as the surgeon, Stephen Strange. And then it also has Benedict Wong, Rachel McAdams, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and brief showings from Benjamin Bratt, and then Mads Mikkelsen, and Tilda Swinton.
Oh, she's great.
It has cool characters, and Mads Mikkelsen is best known. He was the bad guy in the Bond movie Casino Royale.
Oh, and he has with like
the scar,
or the tear,
blood tears.
The blood tear. Oh my God, he's so bad.
Yeah, he's a really
is
good
he bad
guy.
In this movie? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it premiered in Hong Kong, October 13th, 2016, and it grossed $677 million worldwide. It was all around a success. Praised for its visuals, music, and cast, and received an Academy Award nomination for Best Visual Effects.
Wow.
And its sequel, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, is scheduled for release March 2022.
Oh, okay.
So next year, at this time, we'll see the sequel. What did I like about it? I think, first off, it was a great change from the battling superheroes.
Oh, okay. It's more like intellectual, is that?
I would say it's a little bit more intellectual. Benedict Cumberbatch is like, he's a really sharp, eloquent.
Yeah, he's
like,
very
he's eloquent. Got that kind of a that great British accent. He's really like, I don't know, his face is like bony and angular,
like a
and yeah,
or a doctor.
And his character is really cool. So it's an origin story. So it's basically it kind of the how he became Doctor Strange, and that part is really cool. It's really human. He's a like an all-star surgeon. He's really full of himself, and you know,
then he has some accidents and then finds this, accesses his powers. Oh. And so it's a really good story because it follows that very predictable kind of like things are going great, then something bad happens to the character, and then through hard work and all kinds of craziness they become powerful. Huh. It's very satisfying. It's like, I don't know, it's a predictable plot.
Yeah,
but it's very intelligent. Hmm. And his main thing is like spells and sorcery.
Yeah,
which I normally don't get into. The whole wizard thing is okay. Not really something that I'm into, but this it briefly kind of gets into the spells, incantations kind of stuff, but it lends itself more to him as like his superpower. Okay. Is sort of like this is what he does, and it's very different from the like Avengers movies, like Winter Soldier, Falcon, Captain America. They tend to like just battle, like they kick, like Hawkeye with the bow and arrow, they kick, they punch, they shoot each other, they slam each other into buildings. It's like a action punch out game or movie, and they start to get tiresome for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially because you've been watching so many of them, it would just feel like overload of that, like just so many action fighting scenes.
And watching them this way is not the natural way, you know. Obviously the movies came out mm-hmm. you know once every couple of years or something like that, but they're just, the Avengers movies do tend to be like, you know, 2 hours of cars racing, crashing, slamming, guns, those jumping spin kicks where like they jump up and then wrap your head up in their legs and then flip you over, and like that kind of stuff is cool, but it gets a little old after a while. So Doctor Strange kind of comes in, and he's a really refreshing, cool character.
Nice.
And the visual effects Academy Award nomination is well deserved. It is visually like, there's a reason why it did really well in IMAX. It's like, it has some similar things to Inception.
Oh,
if you remember some of the different ways that they move the world.
God, I love that movie.
Or like some of the Matrix movies where, you know, time bends and slows down and different things rearrange themselves.
It's just
really fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't know anything about Marvel, or this is the only Marvel movie that you watch, you don't need to have any prior knowledge. Mm. It's the origin story, so it's him realizing his power.
Yeah.
And there isn't anything that you need to know. You're not going to be lost.
Does he have a love interest?
There's a... Rachel McAdams is a sort of a love interest, but she's another doctor that he works with, and like they don't exactly, they're not like lovey, they're more like friends-ish, but she kind of becomes like his anchor to
like an assistant,
the real world. No, she's not his assistant, like, which is cool.
That's sexist.
She's just like, she's in the real world at a New York hospital, and he's off like doing these crazy mind-bending things. And when he comes back, like, she's the one that kind of keeps him sort of anchored. Stop.
So let's revisit why you originally set out to watch all of these.
I think because I was getting into WandaVision.
Oh. And,
well, I was excited about WandaVision. It hadn't come out yet.
Okay.
The other reason was because it's just going to keep growing and growing and keep going. And it's culturally, it's just this big thing. Mm-hmm. Like, so many
it's
cultural
like not
references.
About Friends. Like when we had never watched Friends, and then we binged it when the pandemic... Was that when the pandemic first started?
I think we binged all
of Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you miss a lot of cultural references.
Yeah, and I just wanted to catch up. And
figure out and see what it was all about. You know what I mean? And it has kept me interested. So I would recommend Doctor Strange if you are curious about Marvel movies or if you think that the regular superhero stuff is kind of dumb. Doctor Strange is a really fun character. Benedict Cumberbatch plays him really well. And this movie, you don't need to know anything. And visually, cinematically, the music, it's all just like very big and
nice.
A huge production, and it's fun and really engaging, and the effects are just like trippy, and they do all kinds of weird stuff and like spin city blocks around.
Ooh.
And all that kind of
what
stuff.
City?
It's like a
New York?
They go in New York, Hong Kong, and London are the two are the three main places.
God,
in
New
the
New York is the best place for a movie setting. Isn't it? I mean, I could see, yeah, like, well, any huge, huge city like that, like Tokyo, New York.
Mm-hmm. And they make really fun visual tricks and patterns, and I don't know, it just has a little bit of everything. Like, for me, when I watch a movie, it's like a Friday night movie or whatever, mm-hmm. like, I want to be like, whoa, that's crazy.
You want a big, like, yeah,
and Doctor Strange delivers
nice.
On that. So nice. That's what I brought to the table,
that's
Doctor
awesome.
Strange.
Very cool.
You want to go? Scrappy, do you want to add anything?
Oh, he'll add his in as needed. What happened? Did he grumble at you?
He's being grumbly under the table.
He's real grumpy. Okay, he's grumpy because of the neighbor dog. All right, Scrappy, we're not doing this. All right, don't interrupt me. I brought Eat a Peach, a memoir by David Chang. So this was a great book. I didn't know what to expect. You know, I expected, I love memoirs, I love food. So, you know, I expected that it would satisfy me in those ways, but I didn't anticipate the complexity of David Chang and all of his struggles. You know, I had no idea about his struggles with mental health and just, you know, how severe it got for him at times, and just his different ups and downs. So it really was like a very, you know, layered book, peeling back the layers, onion layers of David Chang, if you will. Gosh, he has so many like restaurants and ventures that he does. He has like a Momofuku Empire, which that was his first restaurant, Momofuku. But now he has restaurants, a few in New York, Las Vegas, Australia. So he kind of talks about the process of opening up a new restaurant and what that entails, and how he, you know, pushes through his depression and bipolar disorder to overcome, you know, his really like lack of confidence, and to just, you know, have these really successful restaurants. And so, you know, talks about how he really pushes through that. There are some chapters, you know, where he talks about like his therapy and difficulties with like medications, different highs and lows that he has. So I didn't expect all of that, but it was really interesting. And I think really good for people to know about, because I think when I know David Chang from, well, not I know David Chang. Yeah, him and I are friends. I know him from like shows like Ugly Delicious. What was the other one? Breakfast, Lunch, and Dinner. Was
both
he
them.
On Mind of a Chef also?
They might have done an episode with him.
He might have been on Mind of a Chef. So he's been on a lot of different shows.
Both on Netflix, right?
Yes. Breakfast, Lunch, and Dinner was an awesome show where he goes on culinary adventures around the world with famous friends. My favorite one was when he met up with Seth Rogen in Vancouver. That was a good one. So yeah, he does a lot of things, but that was kind of where I first found out about him from. And So to see him, it really seems like he is just a super cheery, like, happy-go-lucky kind of guy. And so it's interesting to hear, like, all that he has going on underneath. You know, like an iceberg. Like, that's just the tip of what you see. But then there's so much else that you don't see. So I think it's really, it's good because it kind of highlights, like, invisible disabilities. So, you know, we wouldn't necessarily look at him and think he has a disability, but he does. He's really been struggling with a mental health condition for a long time. So I thought that was interesting, you know, how he's really persevered through that. It also, you know, he talks about Anthony Bourdain, who also, you know, struggled with mental health conditions and addiction. He talks about the last time they met up and, like, an email that he got from him after that. He talks about Christine Tosi from Milk Bar. So it's good to that he kind of brings up some of these other people. He talks really highly about Tom Cliclio from Top Chef. So just kind of, I liked hearing about other people in the industry too that he's kind of inspired by. And I thought he does a good job of talking about the difficulties of like being an Asian chef and really like being in America, at least, like competing with a lot of really well-renowned, famous, you know, like white chefs or men, or also people who have been really like French culinary trained, and kind of the, I guess, feeling like inferior coming into this as like an Asian chef and really trying to get people interested in Asian food. I thought it was really interesting this where he talks about Italian food and, you know, we'll go out and pay $25 for pasta. You don't question it. You don't second guess it. But if you went to a Chinese restaurant and the price was $25, be like up in arms, or like Thai food, like, oh, what? Oh, I can't believe $25 for this. And so what the point he's trying to make is that those Asian chefs are using like four times as many ingredients that are difficult to get, spending three times longer making that bowl of noodles than an Italian chef would. But, you know, we would never bitch about spending $25 for pasta.
Yeah, because we see that as like going out food.
Yeah, like a fancy like food item, like a celebratory food.
So he does so many things.
Does
he talk about how he's able to juggle all of that?
Well, it's interesting. So it really seems like he has to do that many things, because if he stops moving, it seems like he will fall into like a deeper depression or like really experience the impacts of his mental illness, was kind of what I got from it. It's just like he has to do that many things because that's what keeps him like healthy and going, and like that's what keeps him doing well. But yeah, I don't know how he does it. I mean, he really does so many things.
What about for the people looking for food knowledge? Like, does he go into the cooking side?
You know, he does go into some like recipe development. I thought this was interesting. He puts in like the original Momofuku sambar menu. So I thought that was really interesting. I was telling you about this one. So sam in Korean means wrapped. And so basically it's like the concept of when you go out for Korean barbecue and you get all those different like lettuces and perilla leaves and the sauces, and you wrap the meat and all of that stuff. It was basically like a burrito place concept, but Korean barbecue wrap, essentially. You can think of it like that. And it didn't do well. It wasn't successful. But he does talk about recipe development, and he talks about, like, there's some really interesting, like, emails between him and the other staff at his different restaurants. They communicate with each other a lot. It's all about, you know, feedback and, like, you know, constructive criticism, like, what went well during this service, what can we do better on. I would say if you're looking just for, like, food porn, or it's not that. I would say it's more about, like, the industry and his own, like, personal journey and growth. So I would say if you're looking for something where it just talks about, like, a dish and making it and what it's like to taste it, it's not that.
Well, even the cover, I'm just noticing, is him, well, not him, but it's a figure pushing a big peach up a hill.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of like the...
He talks about this, because it's a metaphor. I don't know if I'll be able to find it. It's like a mythology.
Sisyphus?
Yes, I think that's it. What do you know about that?
Sisyphus.
Yeah.
Did something to mock the gods, mm-hmm. and then he was punished by having to push a boulder up a hill, and every time he almost got it to the top, it rolled back.
Yes, 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 yes. So that's exactly what it is. Yep.
And I guess that could be how a restaurateur might feel.
Well, yeah, because he talks a lot about the critics and how important they are and how they can really just, like, ruin you. And he talks about the like the Michelin star guide and how, you know, that can be the greatest gift for your restaurant, but also they can take it away. So, like, you can get a star this year, and then if they come back the next year and they think the food is subpar, or it's, like, not consistent, or it's gone downhill, like, they can take it away. And so it's just this relentless pressure, I think, to keep up with the critics, and even think about, like, something like Yelp, like, how that can just really, like, ruin a restaurant to get, like, some kind of terrible review, and then people go on there and mm-hmm. look at the reviews and base their whole decision to go to a restaurant on, like, how many stars does it have, how many reviews does it have. So I think the pressure of all of that is a lot of just trying to please everyone and please the right people specifically. So it kind of is more, that's more of what it's about, is just, like, surviving in the industry of, like, having a concept to open a restaurant, opening it, surviving through it, you know, having it be successful, and then maintaining it. Because you can't just be like, oh, great, it's a successful restaurant, I can relax now. It's never that.
When he's on TV, he seems really funny.
He seems so funny.
Is it, does the humor come through in his writing?
Well, like, self-deprecating, maybe. No, it's not really funny. And I wonder how much of that is him, like, being nervous and not being confident. Because he seems to be someone who has, like, a perpetual, like, imposter syndrome. Like, even despite, like, having this Momofuku empire, all the successful things that he's done, he's worth, like, millions and millions and millions of dollars. I would guess that he is still a person who goes home at night and is just like, I don't know what I'm doing. How did I get here? Like, I don't even deserve this. Like, I could see that being his mindset. So it's really interesting, but I highly recommend it. If you're looking for something inspirational, like a inspirational story about really working through, you know, like a disability or mental health and being successful and the struggles of that, you know, just some, like, mental health awareness, or if you're interested in learning more about, like, the food industry in particular. Or if you just love David Chang, which I do.
Oh, great reasons.
He's so great. He has a podcast, too, which I didn't know about.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And he actually was one of the creators of my favorite quarterly food journal magazine of all time, Lucky Peach. Oh, man.
You can't be stopped.
That was a good one.
Of course he has a podcast. Mm-hmm. We'll listen to it.
Yeah, we should.
Cool.
All right, and well, highly thanks. Recommend the Breakfast, Lunch, Dinner episodes on Netflix.
On Netflix. Mm-hmm. We should do a rewatch, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I remember the Seth Rogen one a little bit.
The Seth Rogen one was so
good. I don't
good.
Remember the other ones.
Seth Rogen, Kate McKinnon, Chrissy Teigen, and Lena Waithe.
Mm.
The Lena Waithe one's really good. Los Angeles.
You, Captain Memory. You're hey. Good. You never forget stuff.
I never awesome. Forget.
Well, just so you don't forget, today we talked about a couple great articles, and I will put links for those articles in the show notes, which can be found on our website, giblpodcast.com. And we talked about the movie Nomadland, starring Frances McDormand, which is on Hulu right now. We talked about the movie Doctor Strange, which is on Disney Plus. We talked about David Chang's new memoir, Eat a Peach, which you can find wherever you choose to access books. If you want more Gaze Into the Blue Light, you can find us on the web on our website, giblpodcast.com. We've got every episode up there, my original artwork up there, a way to contact us if you would like to do that. And as a quick note before we sign off, this project is a podcast project for us, but it's also 100% supported by our faithful listeners. So that means no ads, no promo codes, nothing like that. No stamps.com or meat delivered to your door or whatever else random ads come up on podcasts. So if you enjoyed this episode, or if you're a regular listener, you can support us on our project by doing a few things. One, you can share this episode with someone that you think might like it. Two, you can leave a review, a rating and a review, especially if you're on iTunes. That helps people find us. That is true. It's like if you're listening on iTunes or Apple Podcasts and you leave a rating and a review, then they show the podcast to more people.
Mm.
So podcasts such as this one with one rating and a review,
ooh,
5 stars, by the way,
nice,
don't get shown to many people. So if you want to do us that solid, that would be awesome. The other thing you can do is go to the show's description or to the website, and you can find a place to support the show. And you can support us for as little as 99 cents a month, which is really cool. And we use that to do website upkeep, and we may invest in podcast gear, microphones, etc. So that would be cool. Or if you don't want to do that, you can go to Venmo and send something one time. You can find us there at GIBL Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Enjoy your Sunday.
Enjoy your Sunday. We will see you again next Sunday with all kinds of good stuff. Adios.
Bye.